Hello, my name is Mary Nack. I'm the Executive Director of ACEDS, the Association of Certified eDiscovery Specialists. And on behalf of the ACEDS team, I am excited to welcome you to a new episode of TAR Talk. TAR Talk is a 15-minute podcast coming live from our virtual front porch, where Tom Grix, John Tredenick, and their guests talk about issues relating to technology-assisted review, and just about any other legal technology topic that comes to mind. I want to welcome you back to the porch, John and Tom.
Thank you, Mary. Good afternoon to you and to Tom. It's a beautiful, almost fall day on our virtual porch. I want everyone out there to be enjoying their rocking chairs the way we are and having a virtual drink. I'm tipping a Moscow, well, I call it a Denver Mule. It's sort of a Moscow Mule, but it's in a mud cup and it has a bigger kick to it than those wimps and the Moscow Mules. But what are you drinking today, Mary?
Well, today I'm having a bit of a Prosecco Mimosa virtually.
With an umbrella in it, I see. It's an umbrella in there, I see, as well. Isn't that great? And Mr. Tom Grix, how are you doing this afternoon? And what are you having to drink?
I'm doing fantastic, John. It's a little early in the day for scotch, so I'm having a nice IPA and getting all hopped up and ready for this chat with Dr. Pickens.
Yes, let's welcome Dr. Pickens to our porch. We got a special rocking chair for you. This is episode 2, which we call The Birth of TARDU 2.0. And Cal, and we're excited to have Dr. Pickens, Dr. J, we call him, probably will continue to call him, joining us. Welcome, Dr. J, and what are you having to drink?
Thank you, John, for having me. I'm going a little bit out there. I've got an Austrian soda called Almdudler, so I'm a little on the teetotaling side, but it's the national drink of Austria.
Well, we'll forgive you for that, and I hope everybody out there is having their own virtual drink and taking a 15-minute break in their workday today. Dr. J, we wanted to talk to you about your perspective. For those who don't know Dr. J, he's not a legal person by trade. He's a scientist who spent, I don't know how many years, working both studying and working out west at the Palo Alto or the Xerox PARC Research Center. I always get that wrong, but working on the mathematics of search, collaborative search, and music search and the like. And we lured Dr. J over to work on a practical problem, e-discovery. So how long ago was it that you came over, Dr. J? Tell us a little bit about your background.
So I got to Catalyst in 2010, 8 years ago now. In terms of my background, I've been doing this stuff for about 21 years. And you're right, I did get my start in music information retrieval. They organized one of the very first music search conferences back in the year 2000. This is sort of pre-Pandora, pre-Spotify, all of that. And I was really focused my entire research career on recall-oriented searches. In other words, finding everything, you know, finding the whole story, finding all the documents. And that led me, you know, and then I'd done some work later on in the late 2000s on collaborative search, which is the idea of having a team of users all work together on the same task and algorithmically mediating between the activities of all these users at the same time to make them more effective. And so when I came across Catalyst and the e-discovery industry, I thought this was a perfect intersection of both of my research interests because e-discovery is all about both finding all the documents and searching together, you know, having a team that works together to find them. So it was just ideal, really.
So when you came over, I've got to ask, you take a look at the legal world, how we're doing keyword search, and there are just a few talking about TAR, and particularly TAR 1.0. We had our friends at Equivio, Recommind coming out with their TAR 1.0 methodologies. How did that strike you, and what led you to build what's arguably the first CAL system, a TAR 2.0 system, in general commercial release? We can mention our friends Moore and Gordon and the work they're doing a bit later. But how did you look at it, and what got you going?
Well, I kind of came across it initially by accident. I was doing some research in late 2009, early 2010, where I was looking at, this is before I even really knew about the e-discovery industry, but I had essentially pulled aside effectively a control set and then ranked documents and had users continue to judge documents, and then I looked at this control set and saw whether or not it was continued to change or continued to improve as the users continued judging documents for ranking. And what I found was as they marked more documents, the actual results were continued to get better, but the control set showed stability. So the control set was lying. And I kind of scratched my head a little bit, and I thought, why is that? Is it can we, if we can continue to improve the process even past the point at which the control set says that it's done, then maybe we should never stop improving the process. Maybe we should just continue ranking forever. So that was sort of the birth of the thought. And of course, I had to put research into that question directly, which I started doing once I joined Catalyst, but that was the impetus.
Then we built this engine that would rank all the documents in minutes. How did that change and push forward the CAL protocol?
Really having the speed to get updates is what makes the system effective, right? Because if you re-rank or retrain your system, but you only do it once a day or once a week, you're not taking advantage of all the new judgments that are coming in. Now, if you're doing a one-time training, that doesn't matter because you're just doing this as sort of a one-shot experience. But if you're doing it over the course of review, you really need to be able to rank fast. So as I was designing the algorithm, I kept sort of the ability for the algorithm to perform quickly was at the top of my mind. Because at the end of the day, I didn't care about accuracy of the algorithm in any one iteration. What I cared was accuracy of the algorithm over the full course of the review. And so making it fast optimized for that measure. I go back to that question go ahead.
Go ahead.
One more comment on when I looked at the process that the rest of the industry was engaging in, this whole process around having a control set and then needing an expert to train, it really struck me as coming from the lawyers rather than coming from the data, and a belief that only a senior attorney could provide the judgments on documents that would properly train a system. And so one of the very first things that I looked at when I was looking at CAL is whether or not that was true, whether or not you needed to have senior attorney, super magical expert judgments for the system to work. Because, of course, if you had to do your entire training, your CAL training with a senior attorney, there's no way it would happen, right? Because it's just tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of documents that go into a review. And I found that just wasn't the case. Part of what it means to be a scientist is basically just to be skeptical of what you see out there. And a lot of the research I've done is just taking statements that are sort of accepted as fact and testing them with data to see if they really are as true as common belief holds them to be.
And I think it was Mark Twain, or he was credited with saying, sometimes what you know for sure is what ain't so, right?
That's true.
Tom, you were mired deep in the TAR 1.0 world there. Some people think you might have done the first TAR 1.0 case. Judge Peck has overruled you on that, and I think his decision's final. But how did you get into it, and what did you think of this Cal business? And talk about working with Dr. J.
Very, very kind of you to put me on the hot seat, as usual, John. Thank you for that. I appreciate it. But before we go on, kind of a deviation from eDiscovery, for those in my era, this issue has come up more than once when I've been on meetings with Dr. J. And Doc could ask you a simple question, can you or can you not dunk a basketball? That's what I've been asked.
I grew up playing water polo. That's my water polo is my sport, so I can give you a skip shot, but I can't dunk a pass.
So I got, you know, when I look at this, I've got a couple of questions. Looking back to where I was back in 2011, 2012, when you were coming over to Catalyst, and really there's two of them. First, I want to know, what is it that pushed you in the direction of Cal as being the way that you thought lawyers should deal with it? Because I can tell you there was nobody out there pushing Cal back then. I didn't know what it was, and lawyers were, excuse me, but fat, dumb, and happy with what we were being told. What pushed you in the direction of Cal?
Me.
Yeah.
Oh,
so that was your...
Well, I don't necessarily know that I was, other than the anecdote I related earlier about seeing control sets not changing even as the results themselves were changing, right? Sort of the false front that control sets were providing. Other than that, it was I don't know that I ever didn't think of this as Cal. Like why would you ever stop training? Why would you think that cessation of instructing the computer about what's better would be better than non-ceasing? So I guess I just didn't. I never came into it with a different thought than that.
Yeah, an interesting perspective, because of course I was out there using a simple passive learning tool, right? One-time training, get a set, let it rip. So I never really had that perspective. But when I start talking about simple passive learning, that leads me to another thing that you have done that I found to be fascinating and really critical to the use of Cal in my book, and that is contextual diversity, which goes out and looks for the unknown. How did that come up in your experience and lead you to develop an algorithm for contextual diversity?
Before I answer that, I do want to give one more answer to the previous question about pushing me in the Cal direction and about how it's just like a natural thing. In talking with Gordon Cormack about this, whose work goes back not just to 2009, I think, but even back to 2002, he was doing, not in the e-discovery industry, but he was doing sort of continuous approaches even far back as then. I think it's just a natural, sort of seeing that he also has thought about that for years, such a long time in that way, just tells me it's a natural thing for information retrieval research scientists to think about.
Right.
In terms of contextual diversity now, though, I'll tell you where it came from. It's not my idea. I was working with a wonderful fellow back in 1999 named Don Bird. And he was my research partner on the music information retrieval, music search project that we were working on at the time. And as people were starting to look at music 20 years ago, he came to me one day and said, well, I don't want a recommendation system to tell me what other music there is that is like the music I know. I want it to give me something that's completely out of my experience, that it knows that I know nothing about. And as a way of understanding the music universe and getting introduced to new stuff that takes me out of my comfort zone. And so when I got to, this was 20 years ago, when I got to eDiscovery, it seemed to me that same idea was just a natural fit for doing document review, because of course you don't want to miss anything critical to the story as you're finding all the documents that you need to find to make your case. And so the algorithm itself is something I had to work on and adapt, but the conceptual impetus for the algorithm comes from Don Bird, one of my collaborators 20 years ago.
That's fantastic, and I think actually critical to a CAL tool, which is really devoted to relevance feedback, telling you everything you finding everything you like. I think it's fantastic to go out and look for the things that you don't know anything about. So thanks for that. John, giving it over to you for a wrap-up on some of this stuff when we see how we got to TAR2O.
Absolutely. You know, I remember the big issue for us back then was one that was voiced by a lot of attorneys. How do you know what you don't know? And that's when you came up with this contextual diversity stuff. Give us a minute or two on that, how you even came up with that idea as we go to close here.
It was in my discussions with Don Bird about music and moving outside of your comfort zone in terms of the music that you listen to. Are you asking about the algorithm itself, like the details of the core algorithm, how the algorithm works?
Yeah.
Oh.
How'd you come up with the algorithm?
How does anyone come up with any algorithm? I don't know that I can go too much into that without revealing too many trade secrets. I'm drawing a blank on this one.
They're all sworn to secrecy.
It's just us and all our podcast friends.
Yeah. How did that win you over, Mr. Grix? Because I know it was a big thing for you.
Contextual diversity was critical for me. I actually used a simple passive learning tool because it was random, and I thought that was the best way to get penetration into the collection. I remember having a conversation with you, John, in Nashville when we were talking about what Catalyst does, and I said, you guys have solved that problem for a continuous active learning tool. I can now see why continuous active learning will absolutely work as long as I get penetration into the database. So, John, what do we have left?
Oh, I think we're at the end of this 15 minutes. We could, as usual, go an hour, but in 10 words or less, where's this all going? Will these things get smart enough so that the attorneys can focus on cases and we don't have to do all this doc review, or will we always need that reviewer? What do you say, Dr. J?
Maybe I'm biased by my collaborative search background, but I think it's going to be it's going to be a three-way partnership, right? So people talk a lot about intelligence augmentation, you know, sort of the human augmented by the computer as a symbiotic partnership. I actually see it three ways. I see senior attorney as one of the parties. I see contract reviewers as another one of the parties. And I see computer or algorithm as the third party. And I see the three of those really working together in partnership, where perhaps the senior attorney is throwing out hypotheses or looking for missing gaps in the story, trying to figure out the timeline. And the reviewers are actually putting eyeballs on documents to fill those things out, but both are being helped simultaneously by the machine. And that's a dimension I don't think I've seen anywhere in the industry, is to put those three entities together at the same time and have them all working together.
Well, maybe we can talk more about that on another trip to the virtual porch. I remember a prediction from 20 years ago that also involved three. They said the law of the future would consist of a lawyer, a computer, and a dog. This is early 1990s. The lawyer would be there to turn on the computer in the morning. The dog was there to keep the lawyer away from the computer the rest of the day. So we'll close with that vision. Have a hat tip and one more drink on our virtual beverages. Thank you, Mary. Thank you, ACIDS, and everybody who's joined us. We hope you enjoyed this episode of TAR Talk.
And thank you all for attending, those of you who have attended live, and thank you all for listening, those of you who are attending later. thank you to Tom and John and their very special guest, Jeremy.